I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this is Rugby Tonight Podcast. This week is a European special, so who better to join me than the great Brian O'Driscoll, who got his hands on 4 European trophies during his career. Today we're going to preview each one of the Champions Cup pools, but before we get started, here's a look at what else we have coming up for you. Sarah Elgan met Ulster's new recruit, the inspirational Wallaby back, Christian Leilifano.
Running out was amazing, hearing the crowd sing the Ulster song and the Ulster stand up for the Ulster man, and experiencing that atmosphere was electric.
Saracens hooker Skolt Brits dropped by to the studio as our star guest for the live studio show.
Actually, on the pitch, I love it to play with Vincent, but a guy that's always having fun on the pitch is Billy Vanapola. He's one of the guys that it looks like a breezer. He's a breezer.
And Glasgow playmaker Finn Russell chatted to us about life under new head coach Dave Rennie.
A lot of running rugby and high tempo sort of stuff. So it's that's the sort of style rugby we're trying to play this year.
Great stuff. Right. So why do we love the European Cup so much, Brian? For me, it's a sort of a distant memory. But for you, it's probably in the more recent past.
It's becoming distant. Well, but
I mean, what are your earliest memories? Because you know, we followed similar paths in that it took quite a long time for us to actually win the trophy.
Yeah.
You know, certainly early on for me, I played in some of those big games and against the likes of, Munster and Toulouse, and it felt like a tournament that was beyond reach in the early days.
Yeah, that it continually got away from you, and I was the same. So I started in '99, and I got a taste for it, and I played in it every year up until we won it in 2009. And I do believe I have a love and affinity for it because it took so much to win it to eventually get there. I think if it had come to us early on, and I always wonder about some of the younger lads that are still playing, the Rob Carneys of the world came in, turned professional in 2007 and then won the European Cup, won the Grand Slam a couple of years later. So did it really mean the same to them
as
old timers?
With some of these Saracens players, take nothing away from them. You can't decide when you're going to win it, but these guys are still starting out on their career. They're not even reached their peak, and yet they won the European Cup twice already.
And part of it is then that's the expectation for the club. I think that is the beauty of the new breed coming through, is when you see 20, 21-year-olds winning trophies, and they're like, oh, this is what we do. This is part of our fibre. So you don't have to build all that hope and that expectation and that sometimes the pain that goes with that. These players are ready to come in and win on a consistent basis. And when it becomes the norm, winning is a habit. And when it becomes the norm, then you're shocked when, oh, we didn't win it this year. What's going on? We didn't get to the semi-finals. That's not right. Let's make sure we get back to that next year.
So two questions for me. Greatest European Cup or Champions Cup memory for you? Because, clearly you won 4, so you've got quite a few. But what was the greatest memory for you? And I'm going to throw that the other way. What was the most humbling European experience you had?
I'll tell you the one. The fourth one was a bit of a non-event. I didn't actually play in the final, so on a technicality, it might just be 3. What I did think about doing on the fourth, when I was sitting on the couch that afternoon,
doing a John Terry
with my wife, and I genuinely did. I thought to her, "Will I go down to Dundrum Shopping Centre, which is just a couple of miles away?" And I said, "Will I go down and buy a Chelsea kit and have it under my suit in the stand?" And it would be absolutely hilarious.
Wish you had.
And we were wearing that, like, a similar color blue.
Yeah, of course.
So I thought, Oh, do you know what? I will not want to. It probably is being disrespectful to the tournament if you did that. And as well, I'm like 33 or 34 years of age. Maybe in your mid-20s you might get away with it. But I just thought maybe I'm a bit long in the tooth to be getting away with that sort of thing. So I do remember that it would have made something of that because, it as I said, it was a non-event. And for any player that doesn't ever play in a final,
yeah,
you don't feel this.
No,
the
of
same.
Course you don't.
You don't feel like you've properly won it. It's what we do as athletes. We play. And
but would you say that the first time you won the trophy was probably the best experience?
I think so. I think, you know, I said we had 10 years of pain of, you know, of 3 semi-finals in the lead up to finally getting beyond semi-final into a final. We had Leicester in Edinburgh, so we'd beaten Munster en route. We'd gone, beaten the current holders. And then we were down at half-time as well. So we did it the hard way. We had to pick ourselves up the second half and win out by, you know, I think it was 3 points we won in the end. But it's that sense of relief,
yeah,
that finally, after all these years of heartbreak, that at least we have won. And the funny thing about success is that you forget it very quickly. You shelve those great moments,
yeah,
and then it's about creating new ones, provided you have time on your side. And then you get a taste for it, and you go, right, I want more of that. All those 10 years, they worked to this moment. Now let's capitalize on this feeling. We're in a good place. We've gotten over the hump, and the first one is often the most difficult. And then you know what to do when you get into those tight games again. So,
and what about on the other side? What would you say, not that you've had that many humbling European experiences, but can you remember any that went horribly wrong?
Undoubtedly, I could pick a handful, because those early 2000s we had some
shockers,
horror stories over in France in particular, you know, on the end of 50 and 60 point drubbings. I played 10 once for Leinster. We got beaten by 50 in Toulouse. wasn't the 10's fault that day.
Clearly the forwards were up to scratch.
I just didn't get the service I was looking for.
Quite right too.
The semi-final to Munster in 2006, that was painful for us. We got absolutely beaten out the door by a much better team, and come off the back of a really impressive win down in Toulouse in the quarterfinal. Great game, and we were pretty confident, but they smothered us. They just had tactically a brilliant game, and then they were worthy winners, and they went on and beat Biarritz in the semi-final. So, yeah, good and bad memories. Yeah. What about you?
Well, similar early memories. Losing to Munster over in over in Thomond Park, the old Thomond Park as it was then, by over 30. Everything that went wrong or could have gone wrong did go wrong that day.
Did you do 10 in the bin?
No, fortunately, I didn't have 10 in the bin. If I'd have had 10 in the bin, I would have done myself a favour, I think. But no, we were absolutely smashed out of sight. I mean, we got 3 points and we were lucky to get that, really. So I think some of those early experiences, as you say, losing a quarter final to Brive, at home at Loftus Road, which we probably should have won, but to be fair to them, they went on and did very well in the competition.
That was when Brive were Brive, though. Yeah. You know, they were a real force back then.
On that side, plenty of humbling experiences. On the flip side, probably the one that everyone remembers is the semi final against Munster. I don't think I've ever played in an atmosphere quite like it. 55,000. Munster fans at the Aviva, at the Lansdowne Road as it was then, and about 200 Wasp fans, it's quite an experience. We had Trevor Leota playing hooker, he just split up with his family, and I said to him that, Trevor, we're the only family you have now, and anyway, he went and gave the first 15 penalties away. I think slightly overcooked that one a bit, but
but Munster used half their bench in him doing so. So
and then I think that final to win your first European final, to do it at Twickenham, was very lucky to play at Twickenham, to do it against the Galacticos of European rugby then, Toulouse, who'd won four trophies, I think, or three certainly at that point, and then to do it in the manner we did with Rob Howley scoring that amazing try at the end.
You look at that combination, I think you must take huge joy in the route that you go and win, whatever about your pool stages. And all pools these days are brutally tough. You look at all five of them now, you don't know which one you'd like to be in. But when you look back on that victory, it was 04, that was
04? Yeah, 03-04, yeah.
When you get Munster in Lansdowne Road and then you go and beat the Aristocrats that are Toulouse, that adds an awful lot more spice to the success story, rather than maybe teams that were fortunate to find themselves through or weren't the huge names in Europe like those two are.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think if you go away from home in a semi-final and you come away, I think it gives you that extra special edge. I mean, I remember another game we went away in the last pool match down in Perpignan and played down there and won, you know, comfortably. But, you know, it was a huge, huge game. So I think those experiences really galvanise you as a group, and they're the ones that you, the memories that you never forget.
Sarah Elgin went to Belfast to speak to Ulster's new recruit, the inspirational Christian Leilofano, who's recovered from leukemia to return to professional rugby. Here's the best bits of their chat.
Born in Auckland, moved to Melbourne when you were seven. What was your childhood like?
Pretty busy. I was one of seven kids. So I had three older brothers, three older sisters and a younger sister. Or two older sisters and a younger sister, sorry.
Was sports always a part of your lives, even from a young age?
I'm quite an active kid and always competing with my older brothers and stuff like that, and always get to try and do what they were doing. And they played a bit of rugby and all different kind of sports. And so I was always pretty active, and I loved touch rugby and then watching rugby as well growing up.
So when did you think, hang on, I'm a pretty decent player, I could do this for a living? At what point?
I don't know, maybe around 17 years old or something like that. Obviously, I got identified reasonably early to that you sort of got a little bit of talent, and you think, oh, these programs are pretty cool. You know, someone's recognised that you can play rugby a little bit. And when I got to represent Australian schoolboys and those kind of things, you sort of look back and think, oh, man, maybe I could do this for a living.
I want to ask you about your first Wallaby cap. What do you remember? Like, literally, what do you remember? Because that didn't go well, did it?
It didn't go well at all. Obviously,
against the
Lions in Brisbane. I was super pumped. All my family in the crowd, there's about sort of 30 of them, family and friends. And then, the first 30 seconds or something, I went to make my first tackle and got knocked out by Jonathan Davies, I think it was. And when I came to, I was like to the doc, I knew that I was in trouble, and I was like, leave me on. And he was like, no, mate, you've just been snoring for the last 2 minutes. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going off.
Brilliant.
It was disappointing to end that way, but the achievement to actually take the field, sing the national anthem, and experience what I did for the first, 30 seconds, and then even watching, to sit back and watch the game and then how the game unfolded and the series, to be involved in the series, was a special time in my career.
And then let's fast forward a few years. You find yourself here in Belfast. What did you know about Ulster rugby before you ended up here?
Not a whole lot. Obviously, I heard a lot. I think I knew some players that have played here in the past, some teammates and some other Aussies that have played here. And then my agent, Clinton Shifkowski, played here for a few seasons. And I sort of watched guys like Ruan Pina. They were obviously a big part of this club and how well they were doing here. And then just the history behind it as well, history of the club and how proud they are here in Ulster. And that's something that really, really interested me and caught my eye a bit as well. And I was quite fortunate as well that I think the stars sort of aligned to allow me to come here.
So what did you make of your first kind of run out here?
Oh, yeah, running out was amazing. Hearing the crowd sing the Ulster song and the Ulster stand up for the Ulster man, and experiencing that atmosphere was electric. I don't know, it was just, I've heard a lot about it. People like wait till you run out and hear them sing. And warming up was special, like you do a little lap and hearing everyone, all the fans clap and things like that. And saw my family after, and my little boy was just clapping the whole game. And my partner, she was like, man, this atmosphere is amazing. Like that family
they
stand that
they
have.
Settled really well here as well.
They're loving it here.
I'm getting emotional now, I'm starting to talk about this.
That's okay.
But like, you know, when you got the news that you had leukemia, how do you even begin to process that?
Obviously a massive shock. I knew that something was up with me, but I didn't really want to, you know, that's probably the masculinity in you, like, I don't want to find out, or I'm all good, I'll be fine. And then to hear that you've been diagnosed with leukemia was a massive shock, and straight away it was, how do I process this? And obviously there's all different emotions and thoughts that go through your mind. And some of them as wild as they can be. It's like, you know, you think of the worst thing that could happen. I found out Thursday that I was diagnosed, and I started chemotherapy on Saturday morning. And it was like, so I didn't really have much time to think.
To process it.
And to process, so it was like, as it was going, I started chemotherapy straight away. And then that was sort of hard. That they said it was gonna, they were gonna hit me pretty hard with it, and the side effects. They explained everything, and sort of one thing that helped me through it as well was a little bit of humour. You know, it was just trying to laugh things off. And yeah. My family are really good at that. Having older brothers that always pick on
How
you.
How did they take it?
Yeah, heavy. You know, I think the ripple effect that it has. Obviously, one person's diagnosed, but the ripple effect that it has on, and we still saw that with the rugby community reaching out, but. My family were in super shock and took it really tough. I think my mum probably the most out of everyone. But yeah, to be able to have my family be so supportive, I'm truly, truly grateful. And like, there's no amount of thanks you can give to the work and the support that they gave me.
You know, I can't even imagine what you were going through at that stage to think about, right, I'm going to play rugby again. I can't begin to understand when that came into your mind. When...
Yeah, I guess from the start, I was like, we sat down with a specialist and spoke about if transplants go well, what can you do? And he was like, at 6 months, if everything goes as perfectly to plan, a normal person can go back to work. And I was like, but my work's a bit different. So he was like, yeah, I'll still give you maybe six or 7 months, you know, to be able to get back if everything goes well. And he wasn't that confident. But straight away, once I heard that, that was what I worked towards and inspired me. I was like, if I can get through a little window or something in the next goal and just work little steps in it, then maybe I'm a chance.
Because I was reading, you said that you would go through it 10 times again.
I probably wouldn't want my family to go through that again. I think I would go through the process of but I think as a whole, you know what I mean? And in terms of my family, in terms of the community, in terms of the world, that sort of highlighted that or spotlighted me as, I guess, a shining light, you know, that really motivated me. Mm. And to see people have so much love and support and care in the world, I was like, man, there's no other option than to me to make myself better and better myself as a person to be able to give back. I felt like that was my way of giving back to people, just to be able to have time to sit back and appreciate everything you have and why you have it. You know, I think some people missed that a bit. And when you have the opportunity, I think, you got to take it and really enjoy it.
I suppose the process is emotional as well, given that it was your sister that was the bone marrow donor.
Yeah.
And I mean, has that kind of brought you even closer in a way?
Yeah, man, massively closer. I think we're always really close because we're the youngest two, myself and my sister, and we sort of joked about it as well. And she was joking about it as well when all my other siblings weren't a match and she was the last one, and they were like, she was the match. She was sort of laughing around with them, going, oh, do you guys want a kidney or do you guys want a liver or something? You know, you can, I'm offering. So we sort of joked and laughed a lot about that. It was like, oh, geez, she's the match, you know, and really, really special. And I've spoken about it a lot at how special it is for someone to give you a gift of life, you know, to be able to give you a second chance. Her name's Sally and her actual name's Salvation. So it's sort of the stars aligned again, I think, you know. Yeah, the world just works in a crazy way, and I think God has blessed our family, and we thank God every day for that as well.
This has been one of my favourite interviews ever.
Geez.
No, it has, genuine. I feel you've been so given of your time, and it's like you've heard it loads of times before, I'm sure, and it's boring for you, but you genuinely are like an inspiration.
Brian, what an amazing story. You know, you'd have played against him, wouldn't you?
In 2013 on the Lions Tour, he was the one that broke our hearts in the second test. He was the one that kicked the goal, which pushed it to a third game. We should have beaten them in that second. We shouldn't have given them an opportunity. But, yeah, he had that really strange goal-kicking style, which, you know, we're still seeing now with Ulster. But he had a brilliant temperament. I think he got his first cap in the first game and got knocked out within 30 seconds. So he recovered and then had a really good game in that second one. So, yeah, I've come across, man, it's an incredible story considering how quickly he's returned after an illness like leukemia.
Well, it's great to see him back. So moving on to the European Champions Cup action. We're going to start in Pool 1. Now, last season, we'd have said Wasps, on last season's form, would have got into this pool as one of the favourites, although it's a brutal pool, obviously, with the likes of La Rochelle, the French, top 14, finished at the top of the league, Harlequins, who look to be back to somewhere near their best, and then Ulster. We'll just talk a little bit about Wasps. I mean, from your point of view, looking from an outsider, what do you see has gone wrong there?
Listen, first and foremost, you don't have you don't have a huge number of first 15 players to choose from. They've got a wicked injury list, and any team in Europe, if they have that many casualties, are going to suffer the consequences. And you look at the caliber of player, you know, the guys that make a tick in Gopperth and Cipriani being gone,
Dan
Robson at scrum half, Hughes and yeah. Billy Vunipola, or Hughes and in the second row, Launchbury has spent some time out. So when you look at that caliber of player, you know, a lot of their international stars are guys that are the heartbeat of the club. When they're gone, new guys come in, voices aren't the same. Maybe they don't have quite the same understanding of what they're trying to do from a game plan perspective. Yeah. It just is more difficult with the peripheral players to come in and keep the whole philosophy of the club embedded.
And I think if you look at, I mean, they've lost four on the bounce now. And I think the two that will really disappoint them are the two games at home, the Bath and the Harlequins games, because actually the other two have been Saracens away and Exeter away. And those two games are tough games. Perhaps a new competition for them this weekend might give them, you know, breathe a bit of fresh life into what is going to be a squad that's struggling. They managed to beat Ulster in pre-season, but obviously that counts for nothing now. You know, we're not quite sure yet what sort of side Wasse will put out, but I'm sure it'll be a strong side. You know a lot more about Ulster. How have they been going in the Pro 14?
Yeah, they've been a strange one. They're top of their conference, or maybe joint top with the Scarlets. You know, they've only lost one game, but yet there's just a small little cloud hanging over them of a bit of uncertainty. They mightn't have come across the very best of opposition. They've had both Italian teams and losing to Zebre, who was obviously a big shock. They did have a really good win against Scarlet in Kingspan Stadium a couple of weeks back, with none of their Lions players playing, and Scarlet's had all their Lions returning. So that was kind of the result they were looking for, and having to chase the game as well, created a couple of tries from nothing in the last 7 or 8 minutes, some beautiful offloading. Stuart McCluskey had a fantastic game in the centre. So I think they've been a little bit hot and cold, and we're still waiting for a little bit of a spark from them.
Well, maybe this Friday night game will be the one. Can you see Ulster winning that game against Wasps?
I do. I just think with
you have
the
to
troubles
win your own
that
games,
yeah, but I think the trouble that Wasps are struggling with, aforementioned injury list, on top of the form of Ulster in the Kingspan, and the knowledge that they've underachieved in the last few years, I think that's going to spur them on, certainly at home. It's the question mark over Ulster for me is their away form.
Yeah.
Can they pick up at least one victory on the road? You're going to definitely need four victories to qualify. I know it's been done with three in the past, but that's the anomaly in this competition. So you're really looking at four. So you've got to win your home games and then pick one up away from home, and maybe a losing bonus point in the other games if you're to find yourself out.
Let's talk about the other two in this group. La Rochelle, you know, last season's probably top 14 surprise package. It's probably the first experience for them in this big competition. Do you think that makes a difference? Do you think that means it might be a little bit too early for them?
Yeah, do you know what? Experience does count for something, but they're a team that are playing with a huge amount of confidence. They're back in the mix in the top 14. They would have been disappointed having finished top of the pile in the top 14 last year, but then not managing to get the job done when they seem to be comfortably the best team.
I think, again, for me, I think only Gloucester beat them away last season. And so, typical with any French side, they're going to be very, very strong at home. It's going to take a big performance for either Ulster, Quins or Wasps to get anything from over there. The big question is, can the French travel?
And you look at top 14 and it's all the same. The top five or six teams,
it's all about
home and away. It's about... I think they've played seven games. It's... The teams who played four at home and three away tend to be the ones that are slightly above, because it's all going, the occasional away victory, but there's nothing more than that. And that typifies, like you said, can the French teams continue to get beyond the point of not being able to travel well?
And I think with Quins, I've seen quite a bit of them this season. They've been good. They've been very good at times.
Who's impressed you there?
Well, I think that we know with Harlequins, when they have their international contingent playing, the likes of Joe Marler, Danny Cares, you know, in patches has played fantastically well. Chris Robshaw. I think James Horwell as captain makes a big difference. He's there full time. So they've been very good, but they've also been inconsistent. And I think if you see the sort of Quins that we saw against the likes of Sale and Wasps, then they've got a very good chance.
And obviously they're going to be without Kyle Sinclair now for these couple of games. He's serving himself a 7-week ban, and
yeah, it's
and they'll
tight
have to
one.
Dig into their reserves a bit as well.
I think for me, it's such a, you know, like a lot of these pools, it's going to be a really tough one to call. You know, each of these teams have to win their home games.
Yeah,
and it's a question of whether they can pick something up on the road.
Yeah, so who are you thinking? Who?
Well, I, apart from my bias, I would have said Wasps on last season's form, but I can't see them. I think this will just be a good change of environment for them and just a chance for them to regroup.
Do you know what they need to do? They need to get by these two games with picking something up. If they can get one win and maybe even a losing bonus point, that's not the end of the world. Yeah. They've got to get themselves to a place in December where they'll get some of their injured players back and they'll have a bigger hand to choose from. And then they'll give themselves an opportunity to play themselves into a little bit of form as well. So these are big games, not to throw it all away. Don't lose the first two and be all but out of the competition.
Absolutely. So I think it's almost too hard to predict at this stage. But if I had to pick one out of that group to qualify, I'd say my money would be on the French side.
I'm going with you.
La Rochelle.
You.
I just feel if they
too.
Can pick up one on the road, I
just
think
they'll be so
beat
hard to beat in France. And like you said, pick one up on the road. I think it's going to be a tight group. I think you're going to see potentially the winner coming through with four victories in that group.
And you, of course, can see Ulster against Wasps next Friday, 7 p.m. BT Sport 2 and 4K UHD. It's European week, so we've invited two-time Champions Cup winner Skulk Brits to the studio as our star guest. Here's the best of his chat with us and Craig Doyle.
Good to have you with us. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you.
You have been ill.
Yes.
Tell us about it. It was quite dramatic. Just before you almost played Worcester at Six Ways, tell us what happened.
I just thought I had a bit of a stomach cramp. The night before, my wife said I've got man flu. Said I just should go back to bed and sleep it out. The next morning, it didn't go away. Just before kickoff, I told the doctor, I've got a bit of a bit swollen, bit sore. Can you please have a look at it? And he said, listen, you've got appendicitis. You can't play. I didn't believe the doc. I asked for a second opinion. she said, no chance, and then off to hospital.
So how long are you out for that?
If everything goes according to plan, hopefully I can play this weekend.
Okay, so that'll be how many days exactly?
15 days.
Ah, okay. Well, fair enough. Because Luke Gayle, right, the Castleford player, played in the grand final, was named Man of Steel after coming back 16 days before, so you could beat him by. So that makes you Superman of Steel, right?
No, I don't. The problem is the first text message I got was 16 days from my teammates. And Owen has reminded me how soft I am if I don't play before 16 days. So I'm pushing as hard as I can. The guys are looking after me, but yeah.
Well, look, we're delighted to have you with us tonight, as is the world of Facebook Live. Lawrence, lots of questions
coming
in.
We asked you viewers at home to send in your questions, and we got some really, really good questions coming in now. I believe that some of them have even come from some of your teammates. Look at that, Richard Wigglesworth. He must be watching the show as we speak. How come you never train, but you're always fit to play golf?
I think I love golf a little bit more than I love rugby, to be honest.
Who doesn't?
I think it's great for the flexibility. I've always said it helps my performance, you know. At my age, to say flexible, it's quite important.
What are you better at?
Golf.
Wow.
Okay, Silos. At Silos 1979, are there any other leagues, countries that you would have liked to have played in? Because you played in South Africa, you've played in England.
I would have actually loved to play in New Zealand. The way they conduct, the way they coach players, it's quite skill based. They don't just look at size, they see what your skills is and then try to enhance that. I just love the way they try to attack space.
Very popular question there from Debbie DJH. Who is the toughest person you've played against? Would it be another hooker or
Dirty is probably Dylan. But toughest, I mean, Bucky Buerta was probably one of the guys up there that tried to hurt
proper
you
enforcer.
every time.
Maro Toji, he's watching at home, probably next to Richard Wigglesworth. When do you start filming season 7 of Game of Thrones?
my nickname is the dwarf.
The funny guys you're Saracen
Seabreeze. It's just my proportions. I've got a very short upper body, short arms. Yeah, they are.
Okay, should the box stick to their traditional strengths or adapt and focus on a running game? I thought they played very well against the All Blacks. They were, you know, much better, didn't they, at the weekend?
Yeah, I think we can do both. Yeah. I think we need to play a different brand, but still use our traditional big forwards, big backs, everyone just to carry it up. But imagine you can mix both of them. You can attack space and then use the physicality that we saw this weekend.
And what do you make of it? Is it Marks, the new hooker?
Oh, yeah, he looks, like,
yeah, he looks like a player. Kind of a mixture of a bit of you thrown in there with you know, a nice bit of physicality as well.
Yeah, it's like a Bismarck with a bit of skill with it. So it is. Bismarck's going to kill me for some of it.
But I know what you mean, though.
But it's great to see the guys this weekend. They're trying things and they're enjoying it out there. They were under a lot of pressure the last couple of weeks.
Owen Farrell, Owen Faz, as we all know him. What car do you drive? Well, why is he asking that? What car do you drive? Is it a hairdresser's car or something?
You're a humble guy.
You're a humble guy.
I am a humble guy. The pictures I've taken is of my wife's car. So, and I've been driving it.
What car do you drive?
It's a great family car with my three boys. It's a Porsche 911.
Nice, for the golf clubs, right? It's the golf car.
Yeah, it fits perfectly into that.
Kind of young for a midlife crisis, isn't he, lads? What did you say?
Right, Timbo DRM, which Saracens player has been the most fun as a teammate? Good question. Because you guys all look like you have great fun.
Actually, on the pitch, I love it to play with Vincent, but a guy that's always having fun on the pitch is Billy Vinopola. He's one of the guys that he looks like a bruiser. He is a bruiser.
When you're that size, it's pretty cool to have fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, it must be fun running at people in your way. I can't say his weight. He's a big size, and you know he's got the skills to play. It's nice playing outside of him.
Would he be as tough as Wayne Barnes?
Oh, don't play that clip again. I didn't see him coming. I tried to get out of the way. Yes, Wayne is very tough.
Brilliant. We'll take a couple more questions. Rob Thomason, one more season. Those grey hairs aren't fooling anyone. You've announced your retirement, haven't you, at the end of the season. No coming back from that?
No. I mean, I think there's... with all the hookers coming through at Saracens, they're fantastic. It's their time to shine. Jamie is shining. And I don't want to be the guy that's holding on to... a dream. I've had a good time, and I don't want them to push me out of the squad.
You go out of the top, quite well said.
And lastly, if I walk into training, I see guys now that I'm double their age, and that's quite shocking. And I started playing professional rugby when they weren't even born. So it's
But you've got to stop performing like you did against Northampton, and then you won't have anyone calling for you to stay on. You know, if you have more performances like that, it's inevitable. Yeah. Delay retirement. One more year. One more year. Again, Lawrence, I think the beauty of this Champions Cup is you look at the calibre of the pool stages, and you look at Pool 2 and Saracens, Claremont, Northampton and Ospreys, who have been a disappointment this year. But you look at the first three and you think they're all going to win games against one another. So who's going to... Is it a group that you're going to see two coming out of? You've got the two finalists in the same group. How does that happen? What do you fancy for starters?
I think the first thing to say is, you know, this is a repeat of last year's final already in the pool. I mean, that's how tough this pool is. You know, you've got Saracens against Claremont. It's unbelievable. Let's just talk about Saracens for a second, because we talk about, eras of winning and dominating. And, you know, you have to say that Saracens are right in that era at the moment. You know, they're trying to emulate, you know, what you guys have done, what the likes of Leicester have done in their pomp, and certainly Toulon. Toulon won three in a row. And the big question is, can Saracens match them? I think the answer is yes, of course. They've got the full capability to do that. The scary thing for me is that these guys have played and they've won two European Cups, and the hardcore of that group haven't even reached their best yet. So, you know, there's huge room for improvement from Saracens, and that's quite frightening for the rest of them. So I think they're going to have another strong campaign. They've looked very, very strong throughout the start of the Aviva Premiership. And, you know, certainly having a home game, I think, is your first, you know, or having an opportunity to play. That they're actually away, aren't they?
Yeah,
Northampton in their first game. Yeah. But they don't seem to be that fazed by going away from home. Their game doesn't suddenly fall apart. They're so consistent. So for me, You know, there's some mouth-watering prospects in store, but
just on your point of you know the nucleus of their team, you know, Itoje, George is still relatively young, the Vunipola brothers. You know, you look at their outside back, Liam Williams back there. You know, Good is still in his 20s, as far as I know. You look at that core group of players, Farrell at 10 with Lazowski on the bench. I just think they are obviously littered with huge ability, but I love the look of that profile of age. They're just coming into their real form. You know, save for maybe Barrett and Wigglesworth, who still look in phenomenal shape, I think. You know, they look as though a team that are far from transition.
And also, they've played so many times together. That's the key as well. I do think they will struggle. They won't be as good as they normally are without Billy Vunipola. I think he adds a different dimension. So again, for me, if they can get through these early games, they can do enough to qualify. You know, without Billy Vunipola, I could see a side beating them in the knockout stages. I think with him, he puts them back to what I call absolutely full strength.
Yeah, he is. He's the sort of game breaker that you need in those knockout stages. So, yeah, you know, obviously that group has Northampton in it as well. Claremont last year's losing finalists, the perennial bridesmaids. Can they go one step further and achieve what they've failed to do on so many occasions in the last 5 or 6 years?
Well, listen, you and I have been present for some of those games, and we've always sort of, you know, had a bit of a quiet word and said, you know, wouldn't it be nice to see them lift the trophy? Because, you know, you can't keep knocking at the door and coming away second best, and it's just demoralising. If I look at their squad now, is it a stronger squad than they had last season? I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so either.
But I think they still have enough talent. It's really a question of what's going on in the mind and in the head. Because,
and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's, you know, trying to get rid of that baggage that has come through the last 5, 6 years, where the likes of Rougerie just can't get it done. You know, Cudmore moved on to pastures new. Yeah. So there is an element of the new guard coming through that maybe don't possess that same baggage of all that heartbreak of semi-finals and finals. And
I think someone's just got to remind them and tell them that you've got to, in this competition, the quality of the opposition, certainly in the knockout stages, is so good that you have to play for 80 minutes. You can't just turn up for 30 or 40 and expect to win. But in saying that, Brian, I do expect them to qualify to this group. I can see both Saracens and Claremont coming out of this group.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. I think Claremont having won the top 14 last year will be huge to them. I think it's only the second time in a lot of years. You know, we're looking back to 2010, the last time that they won it, and then they'd had all those heartbreaks of 9 consecutive finals, or not consecutive, but 9 previous finals where they'd come up second best. So at least they're coming into this season off the back of a bit of success, having won the top 14, and maybe, you know, here's hoping that they can go one step further for their fans' sake, because we know they are one of the best fans in the world. We were in Lyon a couple of years ago, and they brought a different element.
We were lost in their fans, weren't we? I mean, no disrespect to Northampton. I think that they'll put up a strong fight, but I can't see that the strength in depth of them or the Ospreys in terms of their squad is enough to challenge those two. Although saying that, you know, the Aviva Premiership started with Northampton against Saracens at Twickenham, so the opportunity for Northampton to have Saracens back, it's the only game they've lost this season, and to have them back at Franklin's Gardens, we'll be showing that game live, of course, at 5 p.m. on BT Sport 2 and 4K UHD. The other game we're showing is Ospreys against Claremont, also on 5 p.m. on BT Sport 3. Glasgow's star man, Finn Russell, spoke to us about his hopes for the Warriors in the pool of death. Here's the best bits.
What can people expect from Glasgow? It's sort of similar rugby from last year, like fast, free-flowing stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely be fast. You know, we got off to a good start this year. We're playing quick rugby, we're playing a lot of running rugby and high tempo sort of stuff. So it's that's sort of style of rugby we're trying to play this year, which is challenging for us. You know, you've got to be fit and accurate to play that kind of style. But it forces, you know, teams, the opposition we're playing against, if they don't come up and play that style of rugby, then hopefully we'll be able to outdo them.
Is there anyone like any player, maybe a team that you can in that competition you think that you might need to watch out for, or like you're looking forward to playing against?
Yeah, to be honest, I think most people in our group are you know, Exeter, they're first up. I think we've got them. You know, they're won the Premiership last year, and they've got off to a good start this season, so they'll be dangerous. Leinster, we know what they're like, but they're always a tough team to play against. And then Montpellier, again, they've got off to a good start with Verne coaching there, so a few of the boys here in Auvergne, so I'm looking forward to that game. That should be good fun. But yeah, all three teams in the group will be very tough games. So I wouldn't say there's a set game I'm looking forward to, or you know, a team that's going to be tougher than the other. It's a pretty tough pool to be in, but we'll see how we go.
You say that, guys, in Auvergne, there's been some even more changes now at the top this year. What has there been? What have those changes been like? Anything drastic? Same old.
Yeah, for us as players, you know, we've got Dave here now, which is good. He's been great for us. Good to change things up a little bit. I think the style of rugby he wants to play and the different way he sort of views the game is really good for us and as a group of players to learn from him as much as we can. I think with Gregor going to Scotland for a lot of the Glasgow boys, it's kind of they've shifted across, so that's normal for us. We don't really see any difference. And even Jason and Hums coming to Glasgow, a lot of boys have been involved in Scotland stuff, know what they're like, so we knew what to expect. We know, yeah, easy enough to get on with them and stuff. So it's been, I'd say for Glasgow, a pretty easy transition between Gregor and the coaching staff moving to Scotland and Dave coming over here. It's been pretty easy, but it's been enjoyable so far.
So let's move on to Pool 3, Brian, the so-called Pool of Death. Glasgow, Exeter, of course, the English champions, Montpellier, star-studded Montpellier, who seems to have recruited both in terms of their coaches and the players. And, of course, your beloved Leinster, who cannot be discounted in any European competition. Glasgow are the only unbeaten side in Europe. Let's start with them. Have you seen a good bit of them this year,
yeah. I was particularly impressed with them against Munster a few weeks ago. I think they found Munster on an off day, but they really put them to the sword as well. It's rare enough you see Munster conceding over 30 points. What I was just really impressed with, and Dave Rennie's obviously come in and picked the reins up from where Gregor Townsend has left off, they're very much a 15-man, all-inclusive, wide-to-wide, keeping the ball alive, throwing 50-50 sort of team. And sometimes when a new coach comes in, players can feel a bit curtailed. That's far from the case with Glasgow. It feels as though their skill level has improved this year. They're willing to try things. If it's on from behind your own line, then you go. And I think that's the excitement of the players and the calibre that they have, particularly the likes of Finn Russell coming in and playing that way. That is his game. And I think you've got to play to your individual players' strengths, and particularly the big names like Russell. So I'm excited about seeing them this season. I think they're going to cause trouble. It's undoubtedly the pool of death. I think you look at what Glasgow have done. Obviously, they're unbeaten, but also you have to remember that last year was the first year that they managed to get themselves into a quarterfinal. They came up against Saracens, Allianz Park, and not many sides win there, but they put in a really impressive showing. So now it's a case of, can they improve on that? Can they get themselves, probably again you could see two teams coming out of this, but can they make themselves one of those and maybe get a little bit of an easier draw come quarter-final time?
I mean, Exeter are an amazing side, because I think in the past we've always talked about this incredible journey that Exeter are on, and you know, they're this championship side that have come into the Premiership, but forget all that. They are the English champions now, and if the rugby that they're playing is good enough to be champions of England, then it has to be good enough to stand up in Europe. So I think for them, their mindset has to be, well, you know, come on, guys, we're champions of England. Let's test ourselves against the very, very best. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they fare, because they can't hide behind anything other than the fact that they're champions of England. And therefore, people are going to give them the respect they deserve.
And rightly so. And I think you have to look back as well to, you know, they've done it now in the Premiership. Can they do it in Europe?
Yeah.
You have to remember, other than a Jimmy Gopperth conversion a couple of seasons ago, they were going to find themselves in a semi-final.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, once you're in a semi-final, you're becoming a name to be properly reckoned with in Europe. And they're really not that far away. I think they play with massive confidence, clearly, in Sandy Park. They're such a tough team to beat down there. But also on the road, they're a team that plays so tight together, and there's not that many superstars. They are the ultimate team within within Europe and within England. So I'd be a little bit scared about from a Leinster perspective, what they can bring to the RDS or to the Aviva at Christmas time.
Well, talking about being scared, I mean, this Montpellier squad is absolutely ridiculous. Of course, Fabien Galtier no longer there, but Altrad's really invested in the squad. Vern Cotter's now in charge. I know he's got Alex King working as part of his...
And Nathan Hines.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a bit of... European experience from those guys. Alex, of course, won the trophy with Wasps. Nathan will have won it as well. So, I mean, just their halfbacks alone, you know, Ruan Pienaar, unbelievably good player, and Aaron Cruden.
8-9-10. You know, Pickhamall, yeah. Pienaar and Cruden. It's, it was well documented in Ireland, maybe not so much so over here, that Ulster didn't want to lose Pienaar. It was the national policy that they, you know, they felt that they needed a new scrum half position freed up in Ulster to allow for a player to come through into the national team. Ruan wanted to stay in Ulster. Ulster wanted to stay, but alas, he had to move on. And he, to the benefit of Montpellier, no doubt, he's been top quality for them. He gets himself on the score sheet. You look at that combination of him and Cruden.
I can't wait to watch this team play. I'm very excited about it.
I've seen parts of them this year, and they've had, you know, fantastic home form. They've picked up a good away win. I think it was in Cast. But I think you'll see a different proposition on the road this time round. They were humbled in the RDS by Leinster last year, and they'll be reeling from that. So I anticipate when they go to Dublin this weekend that it'll be a very different Montpellier side that they're going to that'll face Leinster.
And talking about Dublin, no one knows Leinster better than you. How are they looking? I mean, you know, last four again, do you think?
I think they're in good shape. I really do. I think there's been a slow integration of their Lions players back in. They were held back for the first four games of the Pro 14. So I've been impressed. They had a good win against Munster at the weekend. They created a lot of opportunities. Probably the scoreline didn't reflect how the game went. It was only a 6-point victory by Leinster. But I just sense that they'll be difficult, very difficult to beat in Dublin. They've got a very impressive record there, but they know how to go on the road as well. And can they pick up a victory? But you know, you look at the three away teams. Down in Montpellier, they got a draw there last year. Can they do that again? Exeter, Sandy Park, and up in Scotstoun in Glasgow. They are all very, very difficult away fixtures. So maybe it'll be that one where the three home victories is the side to go through.
Well, I was just saying, it's a pool of death for the teams. It's certainly a pool of death for anyone who wants to try and predict who's going to come out of that. I have to say, as much as I think Exeter will go a bit better this year in terms of being champions, and Glasgow are so dangerous, I think the winners of that group, you know, will come from either Montpellier or Leinster, and potentially maybe, you know, maybe even two teams. Who knows?
Yeah. So, obviously, this Saturday our feature game is Exeter v Glasgow at 7:30 on BT Sport 2. So, interesting viewing. Plenty of great rugby ahead of us. How are Leicester and Bath feeling heading into Europe? We heard from Tigers director of rugby Matt O'Connor and his Bath counterpart Todd Blackadder at the Champions Cup launch.
So, Todd, when you first came to the club, and I remember speaking about this with you before, you had set yourself some goals, and I'm pretty sure top of that list was making sure that getting back into Champions Cup happened last season, and it has. So how excited are you to be back in the top flight of Europe?
Yeah, really, really brilliant. I think that was definitely one of the goals, to make the top six last year, to qualify for this, for the Champions Cup. I'm really excited about it, a little bit nervous about it, to be honest, because I know it's a whole new step up. I mean, the Challenge Cup last year, we're probably lucky with the draw. Some of the teams probably weren't as physical as what it's going to be in the Champions Cup, so we know that it's a step up, but excited about that.
So who's been filling you in on what to expect? Who are your go-tos for Champions Cup knowledge?
Just watching the physicality. I mean, I watched a lot of the Champions Cup games last year, and obviously watched the round robin games plus the semis and finals, just to see what, you know, the elite teams in Europe and how they're playing and what we can learn from them. And you know, I love rugby, so I love watching those games. But I could see that, you know, the French teams have got huge power, haven't they? They're really big sides, and you know, you see Saracens just so disciplined with their game plan and their belief and in their ball carries. But you can just see it's a whole new level up. I mean, and physicality and power, and there's you can't afford to have an off day.
So it's Benetton first up. It's an interesting side. They've proved a banana skin in the past for teams who perhaps overlook what they're capable of. So how are you approaching them?
I think if for us, like, we're so excited, it's going to be the first time, you know, in the Champions Cup, and it's a home game against Treviso. So that's going to be absolutely brilliant. So we want to start our campaign really well. But I think those banana skin games are often mental ones, aren't they? And you know, we're not the sort of team that can take things for granted. Like if you put in a poor performance straight off the bat, then and you miss out on things like bonus points, or you take someone lightly or you don't respect them, I think you can get well and truly set on your backside. So that's not, you just can't have that mindset if you want to progress and do well in this competition. You take every game on its merits and you play your best rugby.
So you're putting a real emphasis on a strong start?
Oh, absolutely. I think strong start with the strongest possible team. I think that's the only way to start this competition.
Matt, so you probably have a bit more experience of Europe than most with your time at Leinster and now your second time back at Leicester. What do you make of the competition? How do you view it as an entity?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's a level up on the domestic leagues, and it heightens the urgency around everything. Every point comes at a premium, and the standard of the competition is phenomenal.
Did anything change as a coaching unit in terms of how you approach this kind of game, these fixtures, as opposed to how you approach your weekly Premiership routine?
Yeah, definitely. It's making sure that everything is absolutely at a maximum, and you can't afford not to take as many game points out of the contest as you can, because the bonus points and the for and against and the tries and everything comes to a really pointy conclusion at the end of the group stages, and you got to do as best you can to get out of the group.
And that's Leicester's ambitions, to get out of the group, or is it a bit more than that?
Oh, well, first and foremost, you've got to get out of the group. The focus at this stage of the competition is do whatever you can to get out of the group with that new structure. If you do that, the odds of getting a home quarter final are really strong. And if you get a home quarter, well then, the odds would say that you're going to be in a semi-final. And that's the numbers game you've got to play. And you just got to scrap as hard as you can to get out of the group.
Lawrence, you would have seen a lot of Leicester this year. Maybe not quite back at the Leicester of old standards, but slowly getting there?
I think they are slowly getting there. They had a wonderful pre-season. I think everyone at Leicester got very excited about the fact they were throwing the ball around, and they've got all these incredible backs, star-studded back line. Unfortunately, they didn't get off to a great start. They lost their first two games of the season. But since then, they've really steadied the ship and they've looked very, very impressive. They've been winning on the road, which is always very important. They won away at Harlequins and at London Irish. And you just feel that with the likes of Ben Youngs and George Ford there, two England's two halfbacks, you've got to give them a lot of respect, because if the key for me in Europe, when they take this big step up, particularly against the quality opposition like Racing, Cast and Munster, where they have big, solid packs, can the forward pack win enough ball, control the set piece enough to give those halfbacks quality that they are? Because if you look outside them, obviously no Manu Tuilagi, which is a bit of a disappointment, but the likes of Vianu,
Tamua
and Johnny May, who's just been scoring tries for fun, I think they'll go well this year. I really do. I think they're not quite back to their best yet. Can they mount a serious title challenge? That remains to be seen, because I still think there's some question marks over their forward pack and their ball carriers, but I can see them winning games in Europe.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that they will win games. It's just, again, about getting that consistency. As well as more than most, I should say, what it takes to win up front. Backs are not the guys that win games. You might get an individual performance, a Charles Piatow, that can pull a rabbit out of a hat and win a game for you. But over the course of six games, your pack have to front up. And I just wonder, they don't have very many big names in their pack, but do they have the muscle and do they have the confidence and the calibre of physically strong but mentally tough players to carry them through against some pretty nasty looking opposition in Munster and then the two French sides in Racing and Cast.
Yeah, and also, there's some painful memories for Leicester, both for their players and fans, from last season of going to Thomen Park and getting schooled really by Munster. I'm not even sure they scored a point for a while. So, they've got to bottle that up, and certainly those trips away at Racing and Cast, two French sides, yourself, going down to France once is tough enough in Europe. To have to do it twice in the group is going to be really tough. So, if they get off to a good start, they're obviously playing away first in Paris. They get off to a good start and they come back to Welford Road, and as you say, you get a couple of wins on the board, then I could see them really mounting a serious challenge. Clearly the opposite is also, the same. If you get off to a defeat then it becomes a really, really difficult mountain to climb. But again, you know, Munster, I watched them at the weekend against Leinster. You know, they played well in parts. They looked dangerous, but Leinster were, you know, had the beating of them quite comfortably in the end. But Europe, Brian, brings out the best in Munster. Yeah. I mean, last season, you look at the sum of their parts and you're thinking, no way are they going that far. And they still managed to produce.
And obviously the huge upset and I suppose a galvanising nature of what happened to Anthony Foley, they, you know, that's a year gone by and I'm sure they still play for him, but it won't have the same impact as perhaps it did last year. Can they improve on some of the form that they've shown in the Pro 14? And yes, I agree with you. You know, when you get to Thomond Park on a European night, it's like what you see with Liverpool in Europe. It's in the Champions League, it's different. The atmosphere there is absolutely electric. They are like a 16th man. All those 50-50 decisions, they get onto the referee's back. You all of a sudden do get them, you know, the break of the ball. But can they marry that with the power and the passion that Munster always deliver with a little bit of finesse? I think they're looking like they're going to have some of their star players back. Zeebo looks as though he's just going to make his way back into the team. He's obviously a huge player for them. He has, you know, a phenomenal strike record even last year. He was over the whitewash a huge amount, knows how to finish from 5 or 10 out. Conor Murray is going to be huge for them. But there's a few question marks this week about who's going to play 10. You know, Bladendall, his kick percentage is down to 40%. Ian Keatley was in with him playing at 10 and Bladendall at 12 last weekend. Jaco Tote is out. So I think there's a bit of uncertainty as to who you're starting 10, which isn't ideal.
Yeah, and I think for those, again, I think at home they're going to be very tough to beat. The key question for me will be what they're able to get away from home, particularly in the two games in France. I think, you know, if Leicester and Munster can get, you know, something out of those two games, then they're going to put themselves in a really strong position. Now, let's talk Racing. They made the final against Saracens and got beaten. We seem to hear more about them off the field than we do on the field. They don't seem to be able to behave themselves very well, but they're still, with all those stars, they've still got to be serious contenders, haven't they?
Yeah, they are. Listen, they probably got to a final a couple of seasons ago, before maybe you thought it was their time.
Yep.
Dan Carter's first year with the club, but in the end they were well beaten by an impressive Saracens team led by Owen Farrell. They then managed to barely pick up a point in the group stage last year, which was a bit of a capitulation. It's kind of hard to know. Looking at their form again, I think they're loitering in around seventh in the top 14.
Standard French, isn't
it? Yeah, again, you know, winning more home than away. So nothing, you know, normal business resumed. Mm. I just wonder, do they have the appetite to go again? And you know, you get the sense that not everything is perfect there. No. I think, you know, they're trying to pull in a lot of big stars, but I don't know if it's quite happening for them.
Well, you need someone to build your competition around, and I'm not sure they necessarily have that player. Cast, I think, are going to struggle. You know, certainly had their issues already. They're 11th in the top 14, and they may continue to struggle to compete on two fronts. And it'll be interesting to see how they get on early on, because that might, you know, that might show their hand in terms of their team selections later on in the pool.
So that's it exactly, and you know, it's perhaps, you know, you want to find your game against them in rounds 5 and 6 in Cast, because their interest levels might have waned somewhat at that stage.
So if we had to put our necks on the line, you know, who do you think is going to qualify out of that group? You know, can you only see one winner, or do you think there might be more than that, given Cast might throw the towel in towards the back end of the competition?
Well, you have to remember there's 3 second place finishes come out of 5 pools, and we've probably already picked 2 in our to this point. I just wonder, is this the third one? I look at Leicester and I look at Munster. Munster, I've always been against counting against them or calling against them. They deliver year on year, and I just think that they'll do enough in Thomond Park, and they'll pick up an away win, maybe in Cass, and that'll get them out. I just sense that Leicester, off the back of their disappointment, particularly in Racing last time round, the way that they're ticking with Tamua and with Ford, that, you know, we might see a very different result this weekend. So I'm going to go with Leicester and Munster both getting out of that group.
And you can see Racing 92 against Leicester at 3 p.m. on BT Sport 2. So if we turn our attentions to Pool 5, the last of the pools, It's got Toulon, Bath, Scarlets and Treviso. Toulon, second favourites with the bookies. Not quite sure how deserved that is, but they certainly, under Fabien Galthié, they certainly look a better outfit, more organised. The top players seem to be a lot more motivated, and they've got off to a pretty good start in the top 14.
Yeah, but just listening to stories of players that have been there over the last 5 or 6 years, it's almost quite amazing to think that they became, you know, three-peat winners off the back of how loose they seem to be at training, how the senior players were the ones driving everything. You get the sense that Fabien Galthié has pulled that all in a little bit tighter. Yes, you still have the riches of the quality individual players. They're just playing in a bit of a more unified way. And I don't know if they're quite back at their pomp, but they're definitely going to be in the shake-up. And as you know, bookies rarely get it wrong. So, second favourites they are.
Bath, I've seen a lot of Bath already this season. Again, blow a little bit hot and cold. When they're hot, they've been very good. I mean, they've already beaten Leicester, Saracens and Wasps. Three of the sides that made the top four last year. So you can't discount their form. It's just whether they're able to take that form up to the next level. I mean, there is an Italian team, Treviso. And again, we'd say that in years gone by and say, Treviso have had some significant results this season.
I've watched a bit of them. They're a very different team. Yeah. And particularly over there on the road, they've still been competitive. They got a win against Edinburgh a few weeks ago up in Edinburgh, which was a very rare away victory for them. But whatever Conor O'Shea has done with the structure he's put in place, it's becoming an Italian coach. They are a side on the up. I don't know whether they're going to have enough power come Europe time, but they're not going to make things easy for any of these sides.
Listen, talking about a side on the up, I think the real dark horses for the whole tournament itself in terms of qualifying out of this pool are Scarlets. I think, they're the Pro 12, as it was then, champions. I think they look brilliant again this season already. I've watched quite a bit of them. Wales sides have always flattered to deceive. They've never really delivered the goods, if we're honest. And I think this Scarlets team could be the first team that could realistically be targeting a quarterfinal place.
Yeah, and I think the catalyst of the success and the manner in which they did it, winning the Pro 12 last year, beating Leinster in the semi-final, beating Munster in Dublin in the final, I think really grabbed everyone's attention. We know the calibre of their top quality Lions players, the likes of John Davis in the centre. Lee Halfpenny's come across from Toulon, but they've got a good bit of muscle up front as well. The likes of Jake Ball in the second row, he's not playing for Wales these days, but he is a workman-like second row that you need in there when the going gets tough. And I just like the balance of their team. You still have some players still to return from injury. You've got Shingler in there bossing things in the back row. I just think they are a team that really know what they're about. Tyghburn, a guy that's actually travelling across to Munster, ex-Leinster Academy player, let go, and now he's absolutely excelled in the second row for them. So I agree with you. I think they're a semi-dark horse.
I have them down as pool winners, definitely. And depending on what sort of fight Treviso and Bath are able to put up, we could have our third quarter-finalist coming from this group as well. And if I can see Scarlets winning it, and if Toulon deliver and are able to win at Bath and Treviso, then I could see Toulon coming out of that group as well.
Yeah, difficult to argue with that. Well, listen, thanks for listening to the Rugby Tonight podcast. Make sure you download next week's show. We'll be back on Irish soil with my fellow Dubliner, Craig Doyle. Remember to subscribe to the pod so it's delivered straight to your device every Thursday. And if you've enjoyed listening today, please give us a 5-star rating and nice review on iTunes. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.